FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, October the 8th, 2010. I'm your co-host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by my co-host, Joanne Chang.
Hey, everybody.
Our guest co-host, Carissa Thor.
Hello.
Ooh, that was a bit loud. And our guest technician, Amanda Chalmers, who is running the controls today. Thank you so much for coming in, Amanda, and welcome. Today's show is our Thanksgiving episode, as this week is our Canadian Thanksgiving. Are you two doing anything special for Thanksgiving this year?
I am actually cooking a big feast.
Awesome.
For just me and my husband.
Oh, that's great.
I'm thinking about tofurkey.
For you and your cat, right?
Yeah.
Cat likes tofurkey.
I'm not sure how the wishbone will go, but we'll see.
That's great. I'm not doing anything myself. As I was saying earlier, I used to make a big Thanksgiving dinner every year, all vegan, of course, but have not done so in the last 4 years since my life got very hectic. Thanksgiving is a time to be thankful and grateful for what we have, which is the great part about the holiday, but I also see it as a largely destructive holiday for the animals, those being the turkeys. Today we'll be presenting a segment on celebrating a compassionate Thanksgiving, where we'll talk to you about the history of how the turkey came into use in the Thanksgiving tradition, and we'll share some recommendations of substitutions that you can use for the turkey centerpiece at the dinner table. Not only that, but we'll have tons of recipes to share with you, which are all posted on our website, animalvoices.org, and we'll also spend a bit of time chatting about the awkward social situations that can arise during the holidays, during those family Thanksgiving feasts. For our feature interview today, we have Tricia Berry on the show, who is the Communications Director for Farm Sanctuary. You'll probably know Farm Sanctuary by now, as we've talked about this rescue haven for the animals many times now on the show. Farm Sanctuary is a nonprofit organization based in New York and California, which rescues farmed animals and operates two shelters in the States. Tricia will be talking to us about the treatment of your typical Thanksgiving turkey, as well as telling us about their Adopt a Turkey project, which is an annual program they run in which anyone can rescue a turkey for Thanksgiving instead of eating one. This year, Ellen DeGeneres is the spokesperson for the Adopt a Turkey project.
Ellen.
I know. She really speaks up for the animals, I'm finding now at more occasions. Mm-hmm. And this is very exciting and it's sure to generate a lot of attention to this very worthwhile cause and hopefully generate education towards the millions of North Americans who still see nothing wrong with celebrating the holidays with the dead carcass of a horribly tortured turkey. I hope that this show will also inform our listeners about the issues involved in the plight of the turkeys as they are raised from babies to enormous meat machines and that end up in the supermarket for people to purchase at this time of the year. But before we get to our Thanksgiving features, Carissa, you went to a monumental city council meeting this week in Richmond. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So luckily, I got to go to the city council meeting. And at what immediately became an historic standing room only meeting on Monday night, Richmond City Council voted unanimously in favor of a bylaw to ban the sale of dogs in storefronts in the city of Richmond. Numerous speakers from both shelters, such as the SPCA and the Richmond Animal Protection Society, as well as local residents, took the floor to express to council the deplorable conditions of puppy mills and how breeder dogs are mistreated, the incredible draw of dogs in pet stores and the resultant impulse buys, the endless list of lies on the part of pet store owners, and how overrun shelters are because people surrender their dogs, often claiming that they found them on the streets or running wild because they don't want to admit that they were not ready for the responsibility of another life to care for, and they weren't able to return the dog to the pet store. Also brought to council's attention was the suffering that puppy mill dogs endure, from the puppy mill itself to the pet store with inadequate space and care, and all too often the home they are purchased into, where countless people seem to think nothing of locking or chaining up a dog for a life of misery, anxiety, and suffering. Currently has Sorry, while Toronto currently has a similar bylaw up for consideration, Richmond is the first municipality in Canada to pass a ban on the sale of dogs. The bylaw amendment was first proposed by Councillor Ken Johnston last year and will be brought back to Council for preliminary approval on October 12th, which will then be followed by public consultation. The bylaw would give pet stores until April to sell all remaining dogs from their storefronts, and Council is reported to be preparing a letter to send provincial representatives and other communities emphasizing the need for regulation of pet sales. So I'm interested in your guys' take on this.
Wow, I didn't think it was a ban of just all dogs. I thought it was just puppies. Is it?
It's dogs.
Wow, that's amazing.
Well, it's mostly puppies in pet stores, I guess.
Right,
but yeah.
You won't want to sell adult dogs because they're not cute enough.
Yeah, one person brought up the fact that they purchased, I think it was a Rottweiler, at a discount. It was a purebred Rottweiler that they got for $600, and the staff at the store made... They didn't even try to hide the fact that they were discounting the dog because he had been there so long. I think he was 6 months old by the time he got sold, and he couldn't turn around in his enclosure because he was too big. So that's why they discounted him. And they also admitted that they never took him out for exercise. He had never left that enclosure.
Oh my God. They're just treated like commodities, right?
Oh, it was story after story like that, and much worse. It was like... half of us at least were crying. So.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that this passed. I couldn't make it there because I was working, but you know, ever since Richmond Animal Protection Society took over the Richmond jurisdiction from the SPCA, they have done a great job.
Yeah.
And that was just last year. And they banned the sale of rabbits last year, and now they banned the sale of puppies.
And somebody asked, what about cats and kittens, and council just basically said, right now we're dealing with dogs, but sort of made it seem like they are also open to that as well in the future.
It's great. Either they have a great council or just Richmond Animal Protection Society is just doing such a tremendous job.
Most of the speakers were from the SPCA or the Richmond Animal Protection Society, and you could see it on the faces of mayor and council that they were constantly, with almost every person that spoke, they were sort of a bit blown away, and they were making notes as things were said to them that you could just tell that they didn't understand the issues. And once they did,
you
obviously it made a difference.
Let's hope in Vancouver, right? Because now Richmond people can just drive over the bridge to Vancouver to buy their puppies.
That was kind of what people who were opposing it were saying as well.
Yeah.
Or I think it was the mayor brought up the fact that you can still buy puppies online, like Craigslist and things like that, or through newspapers, and ask the SPCA what they're doing in terms of that. And the SPCA said that they have been working with local newspaper groups like Black Press, trying to, I guess, sort of start by educating the public, because they recognize that it's a huge revenue for the newspapers, and they're not going to just get rid of it right away. But what they have been able to do is start running an ad that does let people know about puppy mills in the newspapers. So that's sort of the step that they're at right now, as they sort of go through the process. I just wanted to let people know what they can do if they want to try to get some laws enacted in their own cities. The BCSPCA website lists municipalities with pending bylaw amendment considerations, such as Pemberton right now is looking at some, and who and how to contact to show your support of new initiatives. You can find the list under current campaigns, and it's entitled Pets in the City. There you will also find the BCSPCA's draft of model animal control laws to aid you in encouraging your mayor and council to enact animal protection laws. So please visit the BCSPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca for more information. So over to Joanne.
Okay, I'm doing the events today. On Wednesday, October 13th at 7 p.m., Earth Save 25 and Under Group will be hosting a vegan Thanksgiving potluck at 228 East 7th Street in Vancouver. The Earth Save 25 and Under Group is open to anyone aged 25 and under, and this potluck is a Thanksgiving dinner for the true turkey lovers. Bring your favorite vegan pumpkin pie, cranberry sauce, mushroom gravy, applesauce, squash dish to share. If you're not feeling autumn inspired, bring anything you like and enjoy a cruelty-free feast vegan style. To register, go to www.meetup.com and search for Vancouver Meatless Meetup. Also on Wednesday, October 13th at 6:30 p.m., there's a vegan meetup dinner at Green Lettuce Restaurant hosted by Veg Meetup Vancouver.
It's delicious there.
Is it?
I'm going to this one.
Okay. At 1949 Kingsway at Victoria Drive in Vancouver. And this place features the unique combination of delicious and spicy Indian-Chinese fusion food. Ooh, that sounds interesting. And while it's not a vegan restaurant, they will be serving an entirely vegan set menu for this event. Dinner is $17 per person, which includes tax and tip, and the menu includes 8 dishes and a dessert. To find the menu and to register, please visit meetup.com/vegvan. On Thursday, October 26th, from 6 to 9, Liberation BC's monthly volunteer night at Mount Pleasant Community Center at 1 Kingsway at Main Street in Vancouver. Join local animal activist group Liberation BC for an event of letter writing, envelope stuffing, and socializing. Each volunteer night includes a workshop that helps activists explore effective ways of helping animals. The October workshop, presented by community organizer Tom Curtis, is called Making History Happen, Movement Making for Transformative Change. This practical workshop will review how past social movement victories can inform our work today. More information, visit liberationbc.org. And ongoing every Monday, there's fundraising event for CATCA, Campaign Against the Cruelty to Animals, Bowl for the Animals. At Excalibur Bowling Center, 12350 Petullo Place in Surrey, near the Scott Road SkyTrain. Have fun bowling and eating veggie food while helping the animals in need. Just get a group of 3 or more friends and come for a bowling evening or afternoon of fun. CATCA fundraiser package is $20 per person. It includes 2 games of bowling, bowling shoes, a veggie burger, french fries, salad, and a beverage. Taxes and gratuity is included in this price. To get the special promotion price, you must tell the receptionist that you are there for the CATCA fundraising and make sure to be there by 9 p.m. If you have an animal or vegetarian-related event coming up that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver. You're listening to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM.
So it's our Canadian Thanksgiving this weekend, and we'd like to share some info and tips and food ideas with you to help you celebrate a compassionate Thanksgiving this year. And what do I mean by compassionate? Well, I realize that the tradition of celebrating Thanksgiving around the centerpiece of a huge dead turkey bird is pretty much always central to this celebration. And to me, that's not what Thanksgiving should be about. Thanksgiving is, after all, a time to celebrate the good things that we are thankful for and to spend quality time with friends and family. And I wish that paying someone to raise a living creature in a horrific factory farming situation where they are eventually killed via an equally horrific slaughter method, and then praising that dead rotting carcass on the dinner table, which was once a living, thinking, loving, and innocent creature, was not a way that people would show their gratitude. To me, thankfulness does not equal murder and death. On that happy note, I'd like to talk a bit about the history of Thanksgiving and how we came to honor this day via feasting on turkeys. We all know about the pilgrims landing at Plymouth Rock in the early 1600s. I'm sure our American friends know more about that than us Canadians do. But that's perhaps what people often think about when considering the early days of Thanksgiving. However, this is not when Thanksgiving, as we know it, was initiated. The forefathers wanted to establish a holiday of giving thanks, but couldn't come to a consensus about it. So nothing was done until the 1800s, when American writer and editor Sarah Josepha Hale kept continually pushing for such a holiday to be established. She was the editor of a popular women's magazine, and every fall she would call for the establishment of such a holiday in the magazine, including recipes that would often feature turkey for consumption. She even wrote a letter to President Abraham Lincoln stating the importance of having a day to lay aside our enmities on this one day and join in a Thanksgiving day of peace. Finally, in 1863, the American holiday of Thanksgiving was formally established due to her perseverance. Now, ironically, many years later, how is it that a day centered around the killing and butchering of a sentient being is considered to be a day of peace? So in the late 1800s, early 1900s, farmers usually killed their turkey flock in the fall because cool weather better staved off the natural decomposition of the animal's flesh. The fact that Christmas and Thanksgiving holidays coincided with this time of year may have facilitated the push for turkey consumption of the Thanksgiving feast. Interesting, huh? Mm-hmm. Makes sense. However, the turkey was not a widely accepted Thanksgiving meal dish until the mid-1900s, as housewives had a hard time extracting the tiny pin feathers from the animals. This problem was solved in 1947 when the Beltsville white turkey was bred and perfected to produce a more aesthetically pleasing turkey carcass, and I actually didn't know that. Of course, since then, turkeys have been further genetically modified to produce unnaturally huge carcasses to feed the growing appetite for flesh of North Americans. Between 1950 and 1960, turkey consumption at least doubled, and the consumption has continued to rise almost every year since due to the National Turkey Federation's mass promotion of their product. And that's how eating turkeys at Thanksgiving came to be. What do you think about that?
Like you said, it's not really a tradition, right? It's now the turkeys are so overbred. I just read this week that the turkeys that we eat now is the equivalent of a six-month-old child that's 1,500 mm-hmm. pounds.
Yeah, I heard Jonathan Safran Foer say that this year.
Yeah,
and then I read that later this week. I know, it's quite crazy as to what, it's like, they're like Franken turkeys.
They're Franken turkeys, mm-hmm. and, you know, Thanksgiving shouldn't be about celebrating, like you said, the death of an animal. And all these animals at the farm, they get their toes chopped off and their beaks chopped mm-hmm. off. And,
yeah,
you know, do people really want to eat that? And every single one of them are artificially inseminated.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to learning more about this in our interview coming up. Celebrating Thanksgiving, a day of gratitude and peace for all we have, does not have to revolve around eating the flesh of a turkey or any other animal for that matter. And it doesn't even taste that good, does it?
I don't know. I think it's pretty dry, right?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah, if I can remember back then. Now, I know that because it's tradition, we often like to have that centerpiece in the middle of the table around which the meal revolves. So if you're looking for some cruelty-free turkey substitutes, we have some to share with you. First, there's quite a lot of faux turkeys created by meat analog companies that are made exactly for holiday celebrations. The first one that comes to mind, of course, is the tofurkey. I've had the tofurkey several times, and I personally have no complaints about it, although I know that some people don't care for the taste or what they might describe as a rubbery texture. And Carissa, you said you may be making a tofurkey for Thanksgiving this year.
I had one for Christmas last year, and it was interesting. I shared my Christmas with some meat eaters, and they thought it looked like a football, but I thought it was delicious.
It looked like a little football, doesn't it?
So there were a lot of jokes passed around about it, but I ate it all myself, and it was
great.
Delicious.
And this year, your cat gets to enjoy it, too.
Yes.
So you can buy a tofurkey vegetarian feast from most supermarkets around this time of the year, and it's 100% vegan and includes a tofurkey roast made with organic, non-genetically engineered soybeans, and they say the roast is now 28% larger than before, savory giblet gravy, wild rice, whole wheat breadcrumb stuffing, and even tofurkey jerky with sticks. It's somewhat expensive, but I do believe it's on par with what a real turkey would cost. So a decent deal. And when I was preparing this piece last night, I didn't know how much a real turkey costs, and it was too late to ask anyone. I wanted to call my mom and ask, but it's after midnight. So we were discussing this a little bit before. You know, I actually tried to Google it online, and it's someone said anywhere from between $13 to $30, depending on the size. I don't know, but the tofurkey roast, I think you said it's about $20?
Is that? I think they're regularly around $30, but they seem to go on sale around Thanksgiving and Christmas to about $20.
Yeah.
And that's for the feast. Mm-hmm. The roast is about $12.
Yeah, so, you know, if you're going to be spending that kind of money on a real turkey anyways, might as well try the tofurkey this year. Mm-hmm. The next product I want to recommend that I think would make a grand substitute for the turkey on the table is the stuffed hazelnut cranberry roast by the Field Roast Company, which is based in Seattle. Field Roast products happen to be my favorite in faux meat products these days. And while they are widely available in the States here in Vancouver, you can only get them at Carmivore, the vegan shop in New Westminster. And I know right now, as of 11 a.m. today, that's just over an hour ago, it was confirmed to me by Karmavor themselves that they now have this product in stock. So if you go over there right now, you can hopefully get your stuffed hazelnut cranberry roast. And if you're in the United States and listening to this, though, just head over to any of your regular natural food stores, and I bet they'll have it. I haven't tried this product before, but I remember it was quite expensive when I saw it in the store in the States. But then again, probably comparable to what you'd spend on a real turkey. The stuffed hazelnut cranberry roast is described as a sumptuous, rich grain meat seasoned with toasted hazelnuts and rosemary, stuffed with a sausage-style mixture of field roast, cranberries, apples, and crystallized ginger. Wrapped en croûte with a rich vegan puff pastry, it is perfect as a centerpiece for a delicious gourmet holiday meal. That sounds delicious to me. And field roast also has the smaller and cheaper celebration roast, which easily mimics the texture and taste of turkey roast, which with the stuffing in the middle. And I do recommend this product as well. I've enjoyed it many times, sliced and warmed up in sourdough sandwiches a la turkey leftovers. Joanne, I know you're not a fan of it. So, you know, I think it really depends on the person. I love this stuff, but other people don't so much.
Right, and there's so many different alternatives that you don't have to love them all. Like, for instance, you love that one. I don't like it, but there are other things that I like.
Yeah, and that's why we're giving you options. Yeah. Lots of options. Mm-hmm. Also on the forefront of popular fake meat products is the company Jardine, which is based here in Vancouver. They have a stuffed turkey roast that you can only buy in the deli section of natural food stores like Capers and Whole Foods during the holiday seasons. Have either of you had it before, Joanne? I know you have.
Had it.
You're the one that told me about it last year.
Turkey ball.
Another turkey ball.
Yeah, and they just call it like a protein turkey. And
I think they're about $4 each, too.
Yeah, really good and filling. So.
Yeah. So you can't actually buy it like in the grocery part of the store, but in delis, natural food stores. However, they do have several other retail products that are definitely satisfying enough to replace the meat portion of the meal. I would recommend their Tuscan breasts, which are made to imitate chicken breasts, but are made out of soy protein, wheat gluten, and ancient grains, as well as either of their mini stuffed meat roasts, as I like to call them. Again, they're like the balls. They have marinara chicken good stuff and Santa Fe good stuff filled with either tomato sauce and vegan cheese, which is very delicious, or a mixture of beans and corns for the Santa Fe. It's very yummy. So these are some of the big name faux turkey products that you can buy, but I also encourage you to be resourceful when searching for a little soy bird. And yet you can actually find a little soy bird from the Chinese grocery store West Best Vegetarian Market here in Vancouver at 4934 Victoria Drive. Upon a friend's recommendation, I had her pick me up 1 year to try out, and I have to say that I really liked it. It's actually shaped like a little bird, which is kind of weird, but it's very small in size, but it does go a long way. And the best part is that it's extremely affordable, whereas the tofurkey is about $20, and you know the field roast products, I think they're up to about $30. This one is only $4 for the whole little turkey bird, and you could even buy a couple of them for that price. So that's an option to pursue as well, or check out your local Chinese markets that carry lots of diverse soy meat products to find something similar. So if you're adventurous and you want to try your hand in the kitchen at making your own fake turkey, you can do that as well, of course. I followed a standard tofu turkey recipe made totally from scratch 1 year that is very commonly found on the internet when if you search for tofu turkey, and I really didn't like it that much. It didn't have any flavor to it, really. And you really have to do flavor the tofu part, because tofu is naturally unflavorless, but it does absorb flavor very well. It was also a ton of work to make, but Joanne, I know you made an un-turkey last year. Can you tell us about that?
Okay, so I'm going to make an un-turkey again this year, but before getting into that, I just want to comment about the price of turkeys. Like Jonathan Safran Foer said in his book, that 7%, up to 7% of the weight of the turkey is water, and that water is what the industry is known as fecal soup. So it's got all sorts of feces in it, and they just let it soak overnight. So, and then 7% of that weight is that fecal soup. So, you know, like you want to spend a little bit more money buying the field roast to not be eating feces, I think. But,
That's a really good point to make, Joanne. Thanks for that. So, but what about your un-turkey?
Un-turkey, right.
So the un-turkey without feces. It's quite inexpensive. It's made of seitan, which you can make using wheat gluten flour, and then you can boil that in a flavorful broth, like a vegetable broth, for a while, usually like 6 to 8 hours. And then you stuff it with regular stuffing, you know, breadcrumbs and stuff. And then you put yuba over it, which is, you can buy it in Chinese grocery stores. They're just a thin layer of like a membrane that's made of tofu. And you can wrap it over your roast. And then when you put it in to roast, it kind of creates a crispy skin. So it, and then it's huge. You can make it huge.
So the UnTurkey actually has a website at unturkey.org. However, the recipe for it is a bit hard to find there, so I've posted it as well on our website at animalvoices.org. If you're adventurous and try it out, please let us know. Now, making a cruelty-free Thanksgiving dinner isn't just about the turkey substitute. In fact, many people don't even feel a desire to replace the meat and will just make some other delicious plant-based dishes as the main entrees instead, such as a rice and pecan stuffed squash, a veggie pot pie, a pumpkin veggie lasagna, or a tempeh stew with wine and shiitake mushrooms. Don't those sound amazing? Those recipes actually come from the ebook entitled A Bountiful Vegan Thanksgiving, compiled by vegan cookbook author Nava Atlas, which features 65 vegan recipes for the holidays, including everything from appetizers to soups and breads to stuffings to desserts. Nava sells this book each year as a charitable fundraiser, and it's only $8.95 US. Such a bargain that I bought it for myself last year. Profits from this project are donated to humanitarian charities concerned with hunger, microfinancing for women in developing countries, and the alleviation of human trafficking. So you can't really go wrong if you want to support those good causes as well as the great cause of making a cruelty-free Thanksgiving. Now, I know there are some common questions that might come around when you're when you want to go meat-free for the holidays, especially if this is one of your first times that you've decided not to eat turkey. So, you know, with having family members to deal with who might not be supportive of not eating the turkey, I'm wondering what advice would you have to offer Joanne and Carissa? And I know you're saying that you're in this situation yourself. So family functions where you say, I don't want to eat the dead turkey. What do you do?
Sometimes I go a little bit hungry. But that's okay. It's kind of tough, but you know, you explain that you're not interested in eating an animal, and you try, I don't know, I try not to make it a huge issue that's going to be like some sort of family brawl.
Yeah, I think it's also really important if you're going to a dinner hosted by a family member or some family to bring some food that you can eat.
Yeah.
And why not bring a tofurkey so that people can try it? They might be pleasantly surprised. You know, even your most carnivorous family members might say, this is good. So I think that would be, you know, one thing to do. And that's also a subtle form of vegan outreach. And also you can try to be part of the meal planning process by trying to be involved with the person who's maybe cooking the main part of the meal, and suggesting that you make some really simple substitutions, such as mashed potatoes. Instead of using butter, use Earth Balance, right? And a lot of side dishes can be naturally vegan anyways, so there's definitely, you know, no trouble there. Ask the person who's cooking the stuffing to cook it, to cook some outside of the turkey for you, since most people not wanting meat might not want that.
I think Krista, our previous co-host, she had the best idea. She always hosts her Thanksgiving and Christmas dinner.
Yeah, that's so what I was just going to say, too. Be the host. Have your own Thanksgiving dinner where...
Invite all your family.
And you're in charge of the food. And you say, yeah, you don't have to bring anything. I'm going to make it all. And that's what I used to do, too, right? Yeah, cook a ton of food. Make it good.
When they can't move, they'll be converted to veganism, right?
Yeah. You know, it does get easier as time goes on. And you firmly established your position in regards to cruelty to animals. I know at the beginning it was hard to tell my mom at first, and then she, you know, kept getting used to it, and now it's like a no-brainer for her, right? And she knows. Mm-hmm. So remember, don't be afraid to stand up for what you believe in. And that's the end of our segment. We're out of time, but I want to say that also I hope that you've taken away some useful information from this segment. And remember to check out our website at animalvoices.org under the episode for October the 8th, 2010 to find a plethora of tips and recipes for celebrating a compassionate Thanksgiving. You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM, CFRO in Vancouver. And here's Carissa with the news.
Thank you. RCMP and BCSPCA are warning Metro Vancouver and surrounding area residents to keep their cats indoors following a number of gruesome discoveries of cats having been cut in half. RCMP Sergeant Peter Thiessen said police launched an investigation after a woman found half of her cat on a neighbor's property on September 20th, and that two other families have since come forward, stating that they found their pets killed in the same manner weeks prior, but that they had simply buried their cats and not reported the killings to authorities. Thiessen said that the cats have pretty much been surgically separated, found sliced down the middle, and that this is not a matter where the cats have come into contact with another animal. Three cats were found in White Rock in South Surrey in September, and two more were killed in the same way in the Brookswood area of Langley in August. The five attacks follow similar mutilations over the summer in Kelowna and Edmonton, but as of yet, no arrests or explanations have come to light in any of the cases.
This is very strange. Who would do that?
I don't know. Like, it seems like a lot of really weird effort to go to kill an animal. Mm-hmm. And BC Animal Protection Officer Eileen Drever said she would recommend you keep your cats indoors and noted that cats live longer and healthier lives indoors than out. Anyone with any information about the murders is urged to contact RCMP or Crime Stoppers. The Toronto Star reported that 81 pigs died Monday as a result of the truck carrying the pigs to the slaughter tipping over due to excessive speed while rounding a highway on-ramp to a Toronto expressway. Seven of the 81 pigs had to be euthanized on scene because of the severity of their injuries, while others tried to escape their cruel fate. Allison Cross of the Ontario SPCA was at the scene and said that it was not a pleasant sight to see and that there were some pigs that had gotten loose while there were other live pigs who were trapped inside the truck. Cross pointed out to the Star that the SPCA attends the scene of any accident where animals might be in distress, regardless of their final destination. The highway was closed to traffic for nearly 11 hours, and the 160 or so pigs who did survive the crash were eventually herded onto another truck and taken to a facility to be monitored by veterinarians from the Canadian Food Inspection Agency to determine whether they are healthy enough to enter the food supply. The driver of the vehicle, a 26-year-old man from Norwich, has been charged with careless driving, according to police. According to staff at Canada West Veterinary Specialist and Critical Care Hospital, Palm, a 5-year-old yellow Labrador, is expected to make a full recovery. She suffered a punctured lung, a dramatic skin wound, rib fractures, and a broken muzzle when she was dragged by a SkyTrain after leading her visually impaired guardian, Iris Thompson, onto the SkyTrain at Lougheed Town Centre on September 30th. Palm led Thompson onto the car, then stepped backwards off the train and back onto the platform, reportedly due to crowding. The doors failed to reopen after closing on Palm's leash, thereby tethering her to the train. Palm then ran alongside the train for the length of the platform and was slammed into a metal pole at the end before her leash finally snapped and she fell onto the track. Helpless witnesses reported that a second train went through the station, just narrowly avoiding Palm, who was said to be cowering just outside of the station before an unknown man jumped down to rescue her, which triggered an emergency alarm and halted the trains. TransLink has said that an independent adjudicator has contacted Iris Thompson to discuss the matter, but is still not saying if they will cover the veterinary bills expected to be between $15,000 to $18,000. Support for Palm has been coming in from across the globe, with $10,000 being contributed as of yesterday. The hospital where Palm is being treated said that they are receiving up to 100 calls a day from dog lovers in places as far away as Maryland, Beijing, and Australia. And hospital administrator Sharon Brown says that Palm is doing well and that she's walking, eating, bright, and alert. Pacific Assistant Dog Society spokesperson Gail Ferrier said, "We're trying to get more information to the public that whenever they see guide dogs in public, not to crowd the dog, which is something we can all keep in mind. You can call 604-473-4882 if you would like to contribute to Palm's Rehabilitation Fund, or visit www.canadawestvets.com, where the hospital has set up a blog detailing her progress."
Thank you so much for that, Carissa. It really was a sad story. I saw that on the news this week, and it's good to hear that she's doing better. Our feature interview today is with Tricia Berry, who is the Communications Director of Farm Sanctuary. Farm Sanctuary is North America's leading farm animal protection organization, founded in the 1980s by Jean Bauer and Lori Husting. And as you may recall, we had Jean on the show just a few weeks ago. Farm Sanctuary operates two animal rescue shelters, one in California and one in New York, and has organized the annual Adopt a Turkey project since 1986. This year, talk show host and comedian Ellen DeGeneres is stepping up to serve as the 2010 spokesperson for Farm Sanctuary's Adopt a Turkey project, which seeks to end the misery of commercially raised turkeys by offering a compassionate alternative for Thanksgiving. Hello, Tricia, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. We're big fans of your show.
Wow, you listen to our show. That's great to hear. As you know, it's Thanksgiving here this weekend in Canada, and as this happens to be our Thanksgiving episode, we wanted to bring you on the show to speak about Farm Sanctuary's role in rescuing turkeys and educating the public on the treatment of farm turkeys. I realize that many, many people in our country and around the world view it as a deeply rooted cultural tradition to celebrate Thanksgiving and Christmas as well by buying a dead turkey carcass from the supermarket and cooking it and displaying it on their dinner table for a family feast. But I also hope, too, that if people really knew the real story of how a turkey gets from the farm to their plate, they would start to reconsider this tradition and celebrate a cruelty-free holiday. First, can you start by talking to us about the life cycle of a typical farm turkey? I know that farm turkeys are unable to naturally reproduce. Why is that?
Well, the broad-breasted white, which is the major commercial turkey that's largely produced today in North America, was essentially engineered through several years of selective breeding for certain preferences. And these preferences are based on consumer preference rather than what is in the best interest of the animal. So, for instance, these birds have been bred over many, many years to have increasingly larger breasts because of the preference for white meat. That makes them a bit top-heavy, mm-hmm. And they've also been bred to have thinner skin than normal. So if the males were to attempt to mount the females to reproduce, they would actually injure the females. And they can't, because of their large breasts, they can't actually fit with the females. So all of the birds that are commercially raised for food every year throughout North America are now created through artificial insemination. That's standard practice across the industry now because these birds could not actually exist in nature.
Right, and there's a video of a farm sanctuary investigation available on the web where this process is very clearly shown, and I believe it's at one of the largest breeding facilities in North America. I think people who are eating a turkey this year should be mandatory for them to watch that little short video before they eat their turkey. They might change their minds. It's available on our website for viewing at animalvoices.org. I urge people to look at it. How many turkeys are raised for slaughter every year in North America?
Well, throughout the United States, it's between 250 and 300 million birds. In Canada, it's averaging about 20 to 22 million, and that's those birds that are actually slaughtered at federally inspected facilities. So there are more birds that are not counted within this structure, but that's the closest that we can get on solid figures on numbers of animals that are slaughtered.
That's definitely a lot of turkeys. So if you're a turkey being bred to become someone's Thanksgiving meal in a typical factory farm situation, which is where 98 to 99% of these animals come from in North America, what kind of treatment can you expect to receive from the moment you're born to the time of being slaughtered?
Well, hours after these birds are hatched, they are normally de-beaked and de-toed. That's a very common mutilation practice with commercially raised turkeys. The de-beaking will either happen by hot cauterization, or nowadays we're seeing more and more birds that we've rescued that they're actually using a microwave laser technique where the end of the beak and the ends of the toes will actually rot and decay and then fall off. And that process seems to be the new process that we've noticed in recent years. But we are still seeing the hot cauterization and just the slicing. And all of that is done without any analgesic or pain relief whatsoever. And it's done to chicks or baby poults when they are only hours old.
Now, I know that debeaking is done so that they don't peck each other's eyes out, right? Is that the same kind of thing for detoeing in the crowded facilities that they're kept in?
Yeah, well, they're kept by the tens of thousands in large, dark factory farm warehouses. And they're usually allotted only about 3 square feet of space in which to live their entire lives. Now, rather than give them more space, the industry alters the birds because they are more prone to fighting and pecking one another when they're kept in such close quarters with one another. And if you see a turkey with their full talons, they have long nails and they can be rather sharp. So just like the debeaking that happens, they also cut off the ends of their toes. Now they're not just trimming nails; they're actually cutting off. Like if you were to look at your hand, it would be at about your first knuckle is the point at which they cut off the toes.
Wow, that just sounds really painful. I heard Jonathan Safran Foer say on the radio this week, as we were just discussing earlier, that if a baby human grew at the same rate as a baby farm turkey, by the time this baby human was 6 months old, he or she would be 1,580 pounds. I think this is insane, and I can't understand why people would want to eat these genetically modified animals. Can you tell us how the weight of an average turkey has changed since the 1960s?
Sure. Well, historically, the average turkeys are on average now, it's increased by about 57% between the numbers that we had are from between 1965 and 2000. The weight of the average turkey raised was of an average of 18 pounds. It's moved up to 28.2 pounds. I would actually argue that's with 10-year-old figures. I would actually argue with all the rescues that we've done, we see these animals are putting on more and more weight every year. So turkey hens, now that's for toms, turkey hens weighed at one point an average of 15.3 pounds at the time of slaughter. And turkey males now weigh an average of 33 pounds at slaughter. And so with this continual increase in growth, it causes commercially bred turkeys to suffer from crippling foot and leg problems. Not only does the detoeing cause all kinds of foot problems, but the added weight, they're putting on weight so quickly that we're seeing all kinds of skeletal issues and joint issues in these birds as they live beyond what their normal slaughter weights would be.
And can you tell us what the transportation process is like for the turkeys, and then when they arrive at the slaughterhouse, how are they slaughtered there?
When turkeys reach slaughter weight at just 14 to 18 weeks of age, they're transported to slaughter. Workers often roughly grab the turkeys by the legs. They throw the birds into crates, which are then stacked on the backs of trucks. The crates normally have open sides and do not protect the birds from the elements during transport. As a result, the birds are exposed to extreme weather conditions, and they may die of heat stress in the summer or freeze to death in the winter. Transport is an ongoing issue with all farm animals. But birds as well, we're seeing literally hundreds of thousands of birds, if not millions of birds, dying in transport every year. Now, turkeys and other farm animals may legally be transported for within the United States for up to 28 hours without food, water, or rest, and I believe Canadian laws are similar. At the slaughterhouse, fully conscious turkeys, they're hung by their feet from metal shackles on a moving rail. The first station is usually the stunning tank. Now, that's where turkeys' heads are submerged in an electrified bath of water. Unfortunately, stunning procedures are not monitored and are often inadequate, which will often leave fully conscious birds to continue along the slaughterhouse disassembly line. Mm-hmm. Some slaughterhouses do not even attempt to render these birds unconscious because turkeys and other birds are specifically excluded from the Humane Slaughter Act, which requires the animals be stunned prior to slaughter. Once they pass through the stunning tank, the turkey's throats are slashed, usually by a mechanical blade, the blood begins rushing out of their bodies. Inevitably, the blade does miss some turkeys, who then proceed to the next station on the assembly line, which is the scalding tank. And here is where they're submerged in boiling hot water, and the turkeys whose throats were not slit are then boiled alive. So it is a brutal, brutal end to a brutal life that right. they live for the 14 to 18 weeks that they live.
And they're really just babies then, it seems like. I'm curious, mm-hmm. What would be the natural life cycle of a non-genetically bred turkey?
Well, the birds that we rescue, which are the commercially bred turkeys, mm-hmm. If we can rescue them, they generally live about 4 to 5 years. I have heard reports of turkeys in the wild. Mm-hmm. Turkeys are actually native to North America. They're the one major farm animal that's raised for food throughout North America that is native to this region. We've seen those birds live 10, 12 years or more. So we're lucky if we get them past 5 years here at Farm Sanctuary, and that's living a very comfortable existence. And, you know, we ensure that we give them, you know, appropriate feeding and high fiber diets to ensure that they, you know, that they can live as comfortably as possible. But unfortunately, the consistent thing that we see is either heart issues. Heart disease is very common with these turkeys, as well as joint issues and skeletal issues. Those seem to be the reasons why they end up passing.
I just want to remind our listeners, this is the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Tricia, what about the so-called humanely raised turkeys from the very small percentage of small farms where they might be treated a bit better than the majority of turkeys? I know people may be thinking that they can avoid the cruelties associated with turkey farming by getting this meat that's labeled as free range or organic. What do you have to say to that?
Well, I think one of the big problems with so-called free-range or organic turkeys is that there really is there are no real laws out there that specify the way these animals should be treated under these labeling schemes. So what one person may envision as free-range, it may not necessarily be the reality for these birds. And in fact, the more free-range facilities that we've seen and so-called organic facilities that we've seen really do not correlate at all with the public's perception of what those labels mean. These birds still come from the same hatcheries. Often, more often than not, they still come from the same hatcheries that all of the commercially bred turkeys come from. They're still the broad-breasted whites who suffer under years and years and years of this selective breeding that has made them grow at unnatural rates. Many of them are still de-beaked and de-toed. So a lot of the practices are actually quite similar. They just may have access to the outdoors where they wouldn't otherwise in commercial factory farm facilities. So I think that's one of the major issues here is the public perception versus the reality of this. There are no, for instance, the U.S. Department of Agriculture does not limit free-range animal density or flock size. So these turkeys are still often packed, crowded tightly together in these farms, which is one of the big, perceptions that people tend to think of when they think of free range. They think of birds roaming freely, like what they would see at our sanctuary, but that just isn't the case in the vast majority of cases.
And I think a lot of people might not know this because their only interaction with a turkey is when it's dead on their table at Thanksgiving, but turkeys are actually really affectionate creatures, and they even enjoy human affection just like dogs and cats do. I know both Joanne and I have had the pleasure of having turkeys come up to us at animal sanctuaries and onto our laps to be petted, which I just think is just amazing. Can you tell us more about turkeys and some of the situations that Farm Sanctuary has rescued turkeys from, and how many have been rescued since you opened in the 1980s?
Sure. We've rescued more than 1,000 turkeys between our two sanctuaries since we opened, and we've placed hundreds more in loving homes throughout the country through our farm animal adoption network. During the Thanksgiving holidays, we have what we call our Turkey Express adoption event, which is part of the Farm Animal Adoption Network, where we'll actually place turkeys in people's homes, because people do find these birds to be companions, and we've heard many stories of birds that will walk up to the back door of someone's house and actually knock on the doors with their beaks to be let in. And we had a turkey many years ago called Lydia. We named her Lydia, and she was known as the hugging turkey, where she would actually run up to visitors, jump in their laps, and actually spread her wings around them. And
that's
there are
beautiful.
Many a turkey that enjoy belly rubs, just like dogs do as well,
mm-hmm.
Where there's a special spot right underneath on their belly where you give them a little scratch, and many of them will rest right into your hand. So turkeys really are just amazing creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And people who have taken the time to get to know these animals really do. They love them. They see them as they would their cats or their dogs.
Can you tell us about Farm Sanctuary's Adopt a Turkey project, and how is the wonderful Ellen DeGeneres involved with the program this year?
We are so excited this year to have Ellen as our national spokesperson for Farm Sanctuary and for the Adopt a Turkey project. And she has joined forces with us to encourage people to adopt a turkey for Thanksgiving rather than eat a turkey. So for $30, someone could adopt a turkey from our website. You can go to adoptaturkey.org to sponsor your turkey. We have 6 turkeys available for sponsorship this year, 3 from our California shelter and 3 from New York. And adopters will receive a special adoption certificate in their name. And they could also give sponsorships as gifts to family and friends. So it's a really great way for activism as well, if you're wanting to do some activism around Thanksgiving to sponsor for as gifts for your family and friends. We don't have that list on our site, but anyone who does sponsor a turkey will get a subscription to our quarterly newsletter as well, which is people really love our quarterly newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
With beautiful photos of and stories of the animals.
Really nice rescue stories. Yeah, it's a great program to have and something that people can easily do to, you know, help out the turkeys. So what advice do you have for people who perhaps after just listening to this interview, I hope, wish to now go turkey free for this Thanksgiving, but they don't know exactly where to start?
Well, I would encourage them to visit adoptaturkey.org because we have several recipes on that site. We have some of our celebrity supporters have provided their favorite recipes. We've also worked with chefs, a lot of great vegan chefs out there who have provided recipes for us as well. They're listed on the site so that you can have an entire vegan spread for Thanksgiving, or if you are going to someone else's Thanksgiving that they're hosting, you can bring a really fantastic dish that's going to blow everybody away. So one of the prerequisites for listing the recipes on our site is that they have to be totally and absolutely delicious.
Yeah, I've looked
for meat eaters and non-meat eaters alike.
I've looked on the site. They look good, and I have that website posted on our website as well, animalvoices.org. Now, I know that Farm Sanctuary hosts a celebration for the turkeys event in November, which is the month of your American Thanksgiving. It sounds wonderful. Can you tell us about that and how a person can attend this event?
Sure. You can sign up and register through the site if you'd like to attend. We are having fully gourmet vegan catered meals at both the California and the New York sanctuaries. And we also have the centerpiece of the entire, of both events, is the Feeding of the Turkeys ceremony, where we will actually lay out a huge spread of all the favorite foods that turkeys love, which actually turkeys love cranberries and squash and pumpkin pie. And so we lay all of that out, and we let the turkeys have a feast of their own. So it's a really great opportunity. Families love to come out here. We have families who come from all over. We get a lot of at our New York sanctuary, because we're actually quite close to the Canadian border, we get a lot of folks from Toronto who come down for the celebration, and it's also just a great way to get, you know, new recipes and ideas for celebrating and sharing with other like-minded people. I think a lot of people see it as just a great opportunity to really spend a compassionate day with other like-minded people.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Tricia, to speak to us about turkeys and Farm Sanctuary's Adopt a Turkey project. It was really informative and very delightful to see some of the things that you're doing for the turkeys. To find out more and to adopt your own turkey for only $30, please visit the website adoptaturkey.org. Take care, Tricia.
Thank you so much.
That was a great show, Allison. Hopefully, after listening to this show, people will be checking out all the recipes and skipping the turkey this year. And to remind our listeners that you can check us out on Facebook at Animal Voices Vancouver, or follow us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR, or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. And you can also check out past shows and the recipes that we talked about on our website, which is animalvoices.org. Next week, we're going to be interviewing Jonathan Safran Foer. We talked about him a couple of times on this show. He is author of the best-selling book, Eating Animals, and you should check out the book. It's quite an eye-opening book about the animal industry, and we're very excited to be having him on the show next week, so please tune in next week. And I am going to leave you with a couple of things. First, a quote from Jean Bauer, the co-founder of Farm Sanctuary. "The essence of Thanksgiving does not lie in eating a turkey, but in gathering together with your family, loved ones, and friends to give thanks and to appreciate mercies, both big and small. We can do that as easily over mashed yams and stuffed squash or meatless turkey entrees as we can over the carcass of a roasted bird." And we're going to leave you with a song by Dr. Will Tuttle. It's called The Turkey Song, in honor of the turkeys this Thanksgiving.